The following is a lecture at Yoga Studio, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasadhikari, recorded on June 25th, 2015, in Los Angeles, California, USA.
Shri Guru, Shri Jatambala Kamala, Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha, Shri Rupa. Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Damsa Jiva Sadaitam Zavadu Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschat Yudhishtarine. So, I've been handed on a golden platter today's topic, the yoga of pure love. What is the yoga of pure love? What is yoga? That's the first question. The Sanskrit word yoga has, according to the etymologists, has appeared in English as the word yoke. This is actually a correct analysis of the etymologists. Yoke is that which links the bull with the plow. It's a yoke, a connecting device. So, yoga is the means of connecting with the supreme, with the source of all existence. Yoga is more powerful than the atomic bomb. It's more powerful than in the Vedas, known as the Brahmastra weapon, which is more powerful than the atomic bomb. There are different types of yoga systems: Dhyana yoga, Ashtanga yoga, Hatha yoga, Raja yoga. But Krishna describes here in the Bhagavad Gita in chapter 6, Yoginam api sarvesham madgatena taratmanam shajavam uchate yomam samayuta tamomataha. All the yogis, the one who unites with me in love, he is the highest of all the yogis. If you have $1 billion, You're already a millionaire, isn't it? So, if one can take to the topmost yoga system, as described in the authoritative Vedic literatures, then he becomes automatically endowed with all yogic powers, all mystic powers of the other yoga systems. Therefore, there is nothing more powerful than the yoga of love. And therefore, I love to talk about the yoga of love because it's powerful. I get yoked with the Supreme when I talk about the yoga of love. So I'm selfish. I get yoked. And you get yoked also. We all get yoked. And we hear and talk about the yoga of love. So let's go deeper into this amazing topic. Actually, it's the ultimate topic. Krishna says in Gita, Raja Vidya, this yoga of love discussion is the topmost science in all of existence. He also says, Raja Guhyam, there's nothing more secret. So how do you penetrate into that topmost knowledge, which is also the topmost secret? You have to hear from someone who has realized in that knowledge, in that science. It's not some book knowledge, you can just read a few words. Someone has to be actually realized in it. I was very fortunate to meet a great spiritual master. Actually, I personally met him a few blocks from here at 3764 Watsika Avenue. The most powerful master of the yoga of love in the whole universe. I personally met him, had some exchange with him, which has carried me into higher dimensions of consciousness, which is carrying me into higher and higher and higher dimensions of consciousness every day. So I wanted to share with you, and I want to share it with the whole world. That's why it's being recorded and being put on the internet. Because the whole world can be transformed to a paradise, a loving, sublime paradise where no one's hungry, no one's diseased. No one dies young. Disease is there, but it becomes minimized. The body will naturally die. But in former ages, when the yoga of love was known and practiced, people lived much longer, much healthier. The whole world atmosphere was so beautiful. It was a pristine paradise on this planet. Therefore, this yoga of love is the most important thing that has to be propagated. It has to be educated in every school, in every college, in every Hollywood movie, in every radio show, every TV program, every book, every magazine should be teaching the yoga of love. Because this yoga of love will completely transform this miserable world into a sublime, paradisical celebration of divine consciousness, God consciousness, Christ consciousness, Krishna consciousness. So, that being said, what is this yoga of pure love? And how does one practice it successfully throughout the entire life to achieve the perfectional stage of Krishna Prema, pure love of God? How does one do that? This we will discuss today. Let's get back to the basics. Why do we exist? Because our parents wanted to have a baby? Is that why we exist? That's called a material conception. By careful analysis, by thoughtful analysis, and by transcendental meditation, one can realize, I'm not this body. I'm a spiritual being, qualitatively one with the source of all existence. So what is the nature of that source of all existence, one might ask? According to Dr. Stephen Hawking, the source of all existence is absolutely nothing. But is that scientifically verifiable? Is it sensible that you can get something out of nothing? When Sir Isaac Newton came up with the law of gravity, he was seeing the apples falling from the tree. There was empirical data to back up his theory, you see. But where is the empirical data to back up this idea that everything comes out of nothing? I actually tried it in Kuala Lumpur. I'm regularly traveling all over the world to teach the yoga of pure love. I was doing a lecture series a few years ago in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. And I thought I would test out Dr. Hawking's theory. I turned on the stove, I took an empty pot, and I went pop, pop, pop. And no popcorn came out of my empty pot. So I realized that Dr. Hawking's has a empty theory. Just as my pot was empty, his theory is also empty. Let's look at another simile now. Let's say every day I bring you a kilo of pure gold. You become very wealthy very quickly. A kilo is worth a lot of money, a kilo of gold. Every day I bring you a kilo of pure gold. And you say, well, Sankarshan Prabhu, where are you getting all this gold from? Well, I've got a gold mine. Yeah, I got a gold mine. Up in the hills somewhere, I got a gold mine. Well, really, how much gold you got in that mine? Oh, there's no gold in the mine. Would you believe it? No, of course not. If you're getting so much gold out of the gold mine, certainly the gold mine must be absolutely packed with gold. You see? So, now consider this point. There is an existential mine which has produced all these personalities, just like here in this room. There's so many persons here. I see here's a person, here's a person. We're all persons here, we're all individuals. We have individual likes, individual dislikes, isn't it? So, if the product, or the products in this case, if the products of the mind have personality, the mind itself must have personality. Therefore, instead of referring to the source of existence as it, we really have to talk about in terms of person. There's a person out there. And from that person, all of these persons are coming out. So then still the question remains, well, why do we exist? Well, it's right there, love. Just as you love to love and be loved, isn't it? Does anybody hate being loved? Just as you love to be loved, that tendency, since you're a part, just like a drop of ocean water, possesses the same chemical composition, qualitatively one with the ocean. That quality you possess of one of liking to give love and receive love, to be in loving relationships, that same quality exists in that Supreme Person. So he loves to be loved, and he loves to give love. And he also has a feminine aspect as well. That's where the original love goes back and forth between the feminine and masculine aspects of the Supreme. So, we exist as emanations of that Supreme Person, who is described in with unlimited names, unlimited aspects, unlimited qualities. Since everything that exists is an emanation of that Supreme Person, every single quality or characteristic that you can find anywhere, it's all present in that Supreme Person. So anything you find attractive, thrilling, exciting, adventurous, nectarian, blissful, whatever you want to say, all of that exists in the Supreme Person. It's all there. So, the bottom line is, if you can yoke or become in yoga or connected with that Supreme Person, the satisfaction, the thrill, the adventure, the happiness, the love, the enlightenment, it is experienced to an unlimited degree. That's why great personalities throughout history used to go to the Himalayas to become self-realized. One of my god sisters, a very, very wonderful god sister who pioneered our movement in the UK, where they connected up with George Harrison. When she first met Prabhupada, she was not yet a disciple. She said, "Swamiji, I would like to go to the highest place. I want to go to Tibet." And Prabhupada said, "I can take you higher than Tibet." She said, "I think I'll become his disciple." So, if you want to go to the highest dimension of consciousness, the highest realm of existence, beyond all the suffering, the pain, the confusion, delusion we experience in profusion here in this world, then this yoga of pure love is for you. It will take you there. I remember as a young spiritual seeker back in 1968, I had read one book, Autobiography of a Yogi, about how you could become self-realized. So I was wondering, how can I do that? That was really all I really cared about. How can I become self-realized? Nothing else made sense to me except how can I become self-realized. I tried one system. I had to pay a fee to get initiated with the mantra. I had to pay money for that. When I was given a mantra, "Aing, aing, 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 aing." So I went home and I was doing my mantra. You know, like over at the airport, you know, LAX, the airplanes, you know, they lift off, isn't it? They don't plow into Los Angeles, they actually lift. In this case, they take off towards the ocean, right? They don't end up in the Pacific Ocean. They actually lift off, you see. So I wasn't lifting off. Aing, aing, aing. No, lift off. Like an endless runway, you know. Aing, 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 aing. But then a friend of mine who had met the Hare Krishna devotees in San Francisco in 1967, who had been turned on to this amazing mantra called the Hare Krishna mantra. He turned me on to the Hare Krishna mantra. There was no devotees of Krishna in the town, Denver, 1968, but the mantra was there. My friend Patrick Dolan, he turned me on to the mantra. And then I found a Bhagavad Gita in the library. And I found an amazing verse that really, I thought was really cool, really super cool verse. Krishna says, Patram pushpam padam tayam yo me bhakta priyachati tadaham bhaktaritam mashnami prajatatmana. He says, if you will offer me with love and devotion, note that with love and devotion, a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, I will accept it. I went, wow. They didn't teach me that in Christian church. I thought God was way out there, like 10 million miles away, you know, you just got to bow down the Holy of Holies. You can't ever get close to Him. You can't ever have any reciprocation directly with Him. That was only for Jesus. You couldn't do that. But now the Supreme Person Himself, Krishna, He's saying, all you have to do is offer me a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, and I, with love, and I will accept it. Wow. How cool. How ultimately cool, you see. So I was downtown Denver, I found some gift shop at a beautiful picture of Radha and Krishna. I didn't know who Radha was. I just thought, well, I don't know if that girl is a boy. She really looks like she's in love with Krishna. Just look at the love in her eyes for Krishna. And Krishna was so beautiful. So I looked at Radharani's eyes. It just, she just, seeing her made me become even more attracted to Krishna. So I took this mantra that Patrick had given me, and I would offer my food, vegetarian food, to Radha and Krishna. And a whole new world opened up for me. An amazing world of higher dimensions of consciousness, beyond Denver, beyond Colorado, beyond the USA, beyond the Earth planet, beyond this universe. An amazing dimension of higher consciousness opened up to me. And after getting home from working in the downtown Denver department store men's handkerchief section. Man, talk about a mundane job. At least it wasn't meat. I would walk home in the cold, the chill of the autumn evening, 20 blocks from downtown Denver to my apartment at 1271 Lafayette Street. And I would go into another world with Krishna, the holy name, and the food I would offer to Him. So in this way, I was introduced to the yoga of love, pure love. Why that distinction? Why not just say the yoga of love? So what is the difference between pure love and impure love? You see, as soon as you say pure love, it introduces the concept that there could be such a thing as impure love also. So then what is the difference between pure love and impure love? This is an important understanding that we must have if we actually want to achieve the perfection of yoga. We have to understand the difference between pure love and impure love. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, he often spoke about impure love in this way. If you scratch my back, I'll scratch your back. You see, it's conditional. If you will love me, then I'll love you. But if you don't love me, I don't love you. You see, that's not pure love. That's impure love. It's conditional. But pure love means unconditional. If you love me, I will love you. If you hate me, I will love you. That is called pure love. That pure love, if we repose it in the Supreme Person, that then will bring us to the perfectional stage called Bhagavan realization. So what is the difference then between approaching the Supreme Person conditionally or approaching Him unconditionally What is the difference? When I approach him conditionally, I say, "Dear our Father who art in heaven, please give me my daily bread. And if you don't, I'm going to stop coming to church." This is actually when the communists took over Russia, they wanted to kill the God consciousness of the people. So they went to the church, the communists came to the church. They had some trucks lined up outside the church, loaded with bread. And they said, "Now pray to your God, please give us our daily bread." And they say, "Okay, where's the bread?" "Oh, there's no bread. We asked for bread and it isn't here." They said, "Now pray, my dear communist comrade, please give us our daily bread." And they would open up the bread trucks and give bread to all the people in the church, you see. If you're on this level of God consciousness, it's called impure because it's conditional. I'm devoted to you if you give me what I want. If you don't give me what I want, I don't want you anymore, you see. But unconditional love is exemplified by a great, great saintly teacher who actually was Krishna or God himself in the disguise of his own devotee to teach us exactly what is the proper mood. Lord Chaitanya taught unconditional love for the Supreme. Whether you handle me roughly by your embrace, or you leave me broken-hearted by not being present before me, still you are my worshipful Lord unconditionally. So this is the meaning of pure love. That I am devoted to Krishna, I'm devoted to God, I'm devoted to, as Sanskrit language, he is called in Sanskrit, Yogeshvara, the master of all yogic powers, the source of all yogic powers, the source of everything. That word is Adi, the origin. He is called Adi, the origin of everything. He is also called Adi Purusha, the original person. So if we connect with that original person in unconditional love, then a very interesting and powerful thing happens. Just like when you water the root of the tree, all the leaves and branches are nourished. When you feed your belly, you fed every part of your body immediately, you see. Not that you have to rub some rice on your elbow and put some halava in your hair to get your nourishment, you see. All you have to do is feed the belly, and then the mystic thing happens. That belly then distributes the foodstuffs, the nutritional value to every cell of your entire body. Similarly, when you water the root of the tree, every leaf and every branch is nourished automatically. So when you actually begin to practice the yoga of pure love as described by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 9, text number 27, Yat Kadoshi Yadashnasi Yad Jahoshi Dadasiya Yat Tapasya Shikonteya Tat Kadushva Madarpanam. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, as well as whatever austerities you may perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering unto me. If you'll actually do this, even if you're a little skeptical, just try it as an experiment. Try it as an experiment and see what the result is. See, real science is not blind faith. Real science can be backed up by experiment. You can actually prove the theory by doing the experiment. Just like when I was in high school, the teacher said, "Students, H2O equals water." Well, we had a chance to prove that, or to see that theory, with the truth of that theory. After the lecture section, we walked down the hall to the laboratory. We were given a lab manual, we were given a test tube, we were given the hydrogen, we were given the oxygen, and lo and behold, there, what did I have in my test tube? Water. So the theory became reality when I could actually apply the theory and get the result. So in a similar way, in the yoga of pure love, the laboratory manual is here. It's called the Bhagavad Gita. And if you actually apply, you take the steps given in this lab manual, the result will be God will become revealed to you. You'll directly experience God face to face, eye to eye. Gradually. Actually, God is already there. Yatra Yageshvara Krishna Tatraja. Krishna is already present. The Supreme Person, the source of all existence. Everything exists within Him, and He exists within everything. So there's nowhere you can go where He's not present. But at the present moment, we are covered by varying degrees of dirt. It's called mala, or psychic dirt, which is covering our consciousness. So it's not that you have to go somewhere to meet God. God is already with you. You simply have to qualify yourself to see God and experience Him by purified senses. Rishikesha Rishikena Sevanam. So the beauty of the process is that it's not that you're completely in darkness until one day all of a sudden you're totally enlightened. It's a gradual thing. You ever go out to a mountaintop to watch the sunrise? Go out into the forest to watch the sunrise? Did it happen like boom? It was night and all of a sudden day? That would kind of ruin it, wouldn't it? It's nice to see that sun gradually coming up, gradually, gradually, gradually. So, in this yoga of pure love, one understands the existence of the supreme lovable object, the supreme lovable person. One begins under the guidance of an expert teacher, a guru or spiritual master. One then begins to channel his or her love to that supreme person. And just like on a beautiful spring morning out in the forest somewhere, it happens. You become a little bit more enlightened, a little bit more enlightened, a little bit more enlightened. And finally you reach the perfectional stage where you can directly associate with that supreme person at every minute. You're in direct contact, face to face, eye to eye, with that supreme person at every minute. So this wonderful process has been coined by my spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada. He calls it Krishna consciousness. So that's what it is. Now, how do you actually do it? That would be the next question. Sounds good. Okay, sign me up. How do I do it? It's not difficult. In this age of Kali, a very, very materialistic age, we've been given a special benediction. In this age, it's much easier to become enlightened. In this age, the shades of gray fade away and it's black or white. You're either on the path of enlightenment or you're on the path of increasing darkness. It's one way or the other. It's very clear in this age. And to achieve that enlightenment is not difficult, because that Supreme Person has appeared in the form of transcendental sound vibration. This is called Nama Avatar. Avatar means, not what the movie said, okay? Forget the Avatar movie. They changed the meaning. Avatar means one who descends from the spiritual world. That's an avatar. Okay, just forget the Hollywood movie. But no offense to our neighbors over here in Culver City, but just forget the Hollywood movie. Avatar means one who descends from the spiritual sky. And that supreme person who has unlimited mystic powers has very kindly come in the form of transcendental sound vibration. So if you want to meet him, you can do it right away. You just have to vibrate the name, the mantra. You can say Allah, you can say Jehovah, you can say Christ. From any scripture, you can chant a bona fide name for the Supreme. However, in the Vedic scriptures, which are the original scriptures that existed even before the beginning of this universe 311 trillion years ago, I'm not bluffing you, this is a fact. This universe actually lit. It's 155 trillion. The duration of the universe is 311 trillion. We're halfway through the lifespan of this particular universe. So 155 trillion years ago, when this universe came into being, the Vedic knowledge was already there. It exists outside of the manifestations and demanifestations of the universes. It's eternal knowledge. Other scriptures like the Bible, the Quran, it just goes back a few centuries. But this knowledge has always existed, and it will always exist. And it is realized by those persons who actually personally experience Krishna or God by dint of being masters of the yoga of pure love. So in this incredible wisdom, there is one book called the Kali Santarana Upanishad. And in this Upanishad, it is stated that there is no mantra more powerful, more effective for liberating one from the material existence than this particular mantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we can chant that mantra and get incredible upliftment of consciousness, as I experienced back in the 60s, and I've been experiencing ever since. This mantra, when chanted according to the proper guidelines coming from the scriptures, coming from great spiritual masters, this chanting will elevate you very quickly to the transcendental plane beyond this world of birth and death. The other guru, he charged me for some mantra that didn't even work. But this mantra, Prabhupada, Swami Prabhupada gave it free of charge as love, you see. Actually, this mantra is worth more than all the wealth of this entire world, multiplied 10 billion times. And we could charge millions of dollars for it, and it would be underpriced. But these great teachers are an ocean of mercy. They're an ocean of compassion. They don't have a tinge of businessman consciousness. They simply want to give this greatest opportunity to everyone to realize their original identity that they once had before they became caught up in the cycle of birth and death. Did you know that? This is not your, this body you have, this identity is American, female, male, all that. This, it's not you, it's just a costume. It's not you. You are an eternal spiritual being, qualitatively one with the Supreme Person. We don't remember it because we've been, for so many eons of lifetimes, we've been rotating in the cycle of birth and death, this false identity with that false identity, millions and billions and trillions and quadrillions and quintillions. You get the idea. Of false designations we have embraced as our true identities, lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. as animals, as plants, as germs, as worms, as birds, as fish, as human beings, as superhuman beings in the heavenly planets, called demigods. We've gone through every single conceivable form. There's actually, we learn from the Vedas, the biologists have not yet figured it out, but there are actually 8,400,000 different forms, and we've been through all of them time and time again. And we were never satisfied. It's like Mick Jagger, but you know, I can't get no satisfaction. We've never been satisfied. Never been satisfied. Because it's artificial. These bodies are just coverings of the actual self. So you want real satisfaction, you want to be enlivened, thrilled, experiencing the sweetest happiness at every minute with not even a tinge of anxiety, then you have to come to this perfectional stage, the yoga of pure love. Because when you get there, wow, there's nothing like it, absolutely nothing like it. Even as you're approaching it, you can feel the anxiety. It's just like there's some birds on the wire, you know, you clap your hands, they just go flying away. By this chanting, all the anxieties, all the crud, it just goes flying away, you see. And you become a liberated soul. Just by the power of the mantra, chanted under the guidance of the expert spiritual master, all of the illusion, confusion existing in extreme profusion is dissipated. And you become the happiest person you could ever imagine you could be. Actually, beyond what you could ever imagine, you could taste happiness. You experience unparalleled, inconceivable happiness. So, if the world only knew, this room would not be big enough for this lecture. Once people figure out, you know, they have to have, what's your biggest hall here? Some stadium? Huh? They have to have programmed at some big stadium somewhere, but seating, you know, 30,000 people. You see, so you are very select, special people. You see, that you have come to this seminar today. You're very select, special people. In the whole universe, you're the cream of the cream of the cream. That you have been attracted to come and hear about the yoga of pure love. This yoga of pure love can solve every problem the world has. Absolutely every problem. I had twofold reasons for coming to the yoga of pure love. One, I wanted my own personal enlightenment. And two, I wanted to, the only lifestyle that made sense to me was to be a spiritual revolutionary. The world is too screwed up. I mean, even back in the 60s, I was saying this world is too screwed up, and it's gotten a lot more screwed up since then. Is it? So there's twofold. It's for your own personal enlightenment, and it's for the enlightenment of the world. You can take to the path of the yoga of pure love. There's a nice mantra that we often sing. It's part of a prayer to an incarnation of God called Lord Nrisimhadev. And in this prayer we sing, just four words, but it's very, very deep in meaning. Bahir Nasingho Hridaye Nasingho. Which means the Supreme Being without and the Supreme Being within. Bahir Nasingho Hridaye Nasingho. So in one chant this Bahir Nasingho Hridaye Nasingho. He is calling upon that Supreme Person to fully manifest within his heart, driving away all the illusion, the crud, the karma, all these things which bring anxiety, lust, anger, fearfulness, all just go away, you see, just begging that Supreme Person, Hridaye in the singer, please come and just drive it all, the nonsense out of my heart. And then Bahir Nrisimho, and please engage me as a spiritual revolutionary for transforming the whole world society, you see. Krishna within, Krishna without. Nishinga within, Nishinga without. We sing it regularly, but we often forget the meaning. Prabhupada describes this in the fifth canto purport of the Bhagavatam. Very wonderfully, what is the meaning of Bahirna Singha, Hridayena Singha? So not only by practicing this yoga of pure love do you become absolutely, inconceivably wise and blissful, existing, you're in solidly existing in your eternal identity, which is called Svarupa, your original form, beyond this world of birth and death, which you actually have, you just forgot about it. So not only do you awaken your Svarupa, or your original identity, in a loving, in a pure, intimate, loving relation with the Supreme Person, but now you become a powerful spiritual revolutionary by whose words, thoughts, and deeds can actually impact in a very positive and tangible way the global consciousness, or as we could say nowadays, the global unconsciousness. Is it? So, what can I say? This is, as Prabhupada said, simply wonderful. This is simply wonderful. And you are all simply wonderful that you come today. So perhaps there's some questions now. If there's some paper writing it down, I'm a little deaf, but my hearing aids work to some extent. Go ahead and try. I'll see if I can make it out. Maybe you can come here and be my amplifier if I can't pick it up. Yeah. He's on the internet course?
Yes.
Oh, very good. I have an e-course on the internet called the Ultimate Self-Realization Course. It's really popular. They got over 16,000 people signed up, and it's absolutely free. And if you want to sign up, you just go to www.backtohome.com, backtohome, www.backtohome.com. If you can't remember that, just go to www.joincourse.com. So yeah, what's the question? Yeah, we'll give those out later. And we have it on card if you can't remember. I have more cards, but what is this question?
I have two questions.
Okay.
Can I come closer or I can ask from you?
No, it's okay.
Huh?
It's okay.
Just he's an amp. He'll amplify it for me.
Okay. My first question
go ahead and sit down.
Prabhu, my first question is can one attain full control of mind and senses through Akhanda Brahmacharya, unbroken celibacy? And of course, love, bhakti also has to be there, devotion for Krishna. But can we attain full control of mind and senses through unbroken celibacy, Akhanda Brahmacharya? That is my first question.
Okay, he's asking me, is it possible? He says, yes, bhakti must be there, love and devotion to Krishna must be there, but can one attain full control of the mind by practicing full celibacy?
Does full celibacy, strict brahmachari life, enable one to fully conquer the mind? The answer is no. The mind doesn't become fully conquered until it goes into the yoga of pure love. In other words, brahmachari life means you're abstaining from absorption in material sense gratification. That's a good thing to do. Although it's not required, we have householders also producing Krishna conscious children, and that's also considered brahmachari. But simply to abstain the senses, you see, that's only half of it. That's called detachment, and detachment is favorable, but it's not the perfection. Perfection is attachment. Simply saying, I'm not going to do this. But you have to have something else to do. I will no longer be absorbed in maya or illusion, but now what are you going to do? You're just going to sit in a room somewhere with nothing to see, nothing to hear, nothing to taste, nothing to feel? Or are you just going to be in a vacuum somewhere? No, the self is not satisfied. The self is active by nature. The self wants relationship. Although brahmachari or celibacy is favorable and is practiced by many on this path of spiritual awakening, it's only part of the picture. You have to actually, you see, denying mundane activity doesn't bring you into love. Love means relationship. So the real perfection is to have a loving relationship with Krishna, or the Supreme Person. And Krishna also says in the Gita, he said, tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti jnanam jnanenas tadvadarshinaha. My instruction to you is, you should develop a loving relationship with my representative, the spiritual master. You see? Because in our present conditioned state, we're not able to experience Krishna directly, although he's there. But we don't have the instrument, the purified senses, to directly see him within every atom and between every atom at every minute. But we can see his representative, the spiritual master. So when you serve the spiritual master and develop a loving relationship with the spiritual master, then you can actually become automatically situated in perfect detachment, because now you have a higher taste. Krishna says, Vishayavani Vartante Niraharashidehina Rashavashang Rashopyashtva Parang Vishvani Vartate. The embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment by practicing celibacy, you see, but the taste for sense objects remains. But ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, he is fixed in consciousness. So Krishna is clearly answering your question. Simply abstaining is good, but is not good enough. You're still going to have the desire for relationship. But when you actually develop a loving relationship with the Supreme Person and his representative, the spiritual master, and his other representatives, the Vaishnavas, now you have entered into a realm of pure love, which will automatically protect you in your celibacy, because now you have something else. You're not just running to the forest saying, I'm going to be celibate, and I can't, just got to stay away from porno or whatever it is, you see. Now you have something higher that actually, just like I was explaining yesterday or day before yesterday in Melbourne, Australia. I just flew in this morning from Melbourne. That actually the pleasure of the name of Krishna, you can say Krishna, and if you say that with pure love, there's more pleasure, more juice, more nectar in saying Krishna one time with pure love than having sex with 10 million beautiful virgin girls. You understand what I'm saying? So if you have that higher pleasure, then you know, it's a piece of cake to be a celibate now. Doesn't even faze you. You'll see every woman is like your mother in the Vedic system. She's not a sex object, she's my mom. There's my mom, you see. I love my mother. I offer all respect to my mother, you see. That's the Vedic vision of a woman who's not my wife, you see. She's my mother. So that vision becomes automatic. It's not some artificial thing. Yeah, I'm actually attracted, but I say, no, it's my mother. No, it's actually becomes realized. You feel it, it's natural when you get that higher taste. So the second question.
thank you very much for your answer. Second question is, I understand that Krishna, who is Swayam Bhagavan, Supreme Personality of Godhead, appears on this planet Earth once in a day of Brahma, once in 24 hours of Brahma, which is 8,640,000,000 human years.
Yeah.
I would like to know about whether Lord Ramchandra, in Narsingha Dev, also appears.
I don't know about Ram, but Prabhupada said that Lord Chaitanya also appears every time. I haven't read about Lord Ram's coming regularly, but I know that Lord Chaitanya comes regularly. But I can tell you this, when you actually connect with Krishna and or Lord Chaitanya, every other form is there. So if you're attracted to Lord Ram, you'll find Lord Ram, because he's a manifestation of Krishna. Krishna is called Svayam Bhagavan. He's the original form of God. So when you connect with him, you're connected with Ram. Every single one of the millions and billions of unlimited incarnations of God that exist throughout the whole entirety of existence, they are all present within Krishna, and Krishna is fully present within these two syllables, Krishna. So Ram is there in these two syllables, Krishna. All the whole Ramayana exists within these two syllables, Krishna. So if you perfect your chanting of Krishna's holy name, you can experience the whole Ramayana by realization. Is it?
And sorry, just one more thing to add. Recently I just discovered, while reading, I believe, Lagu Bhagavad Gita, that Lord Ramchandra appeared during the 24th Yuga cycle. We are currently living in the 28th Yuga cycle. So many people believe in India also that Lord Ramchandra appeared during the last Treta Yuga, two million years ago. But if you go back to the 24th Yuga cycle, then it comes to about 17 million years ago. So which is correct? If Ramchandra appeared during the...
Prabhupada mentioned this in his... In his Bhagavad Gita purports, he talks about this, about the appearance of Ram. Actually, Krishna appeared before Ram when he spoke to the Bhagavad Gita, the sun god Vivishvan. That was before Lord Ram's appearance. So you can study, if you want to get some more information about this very interesting subject, go to the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, text number 1, and read the purport, and you get a lot of really cool information about this. Okay? Yes.
Does one need a living spiritual master to chant the holy name purely?
He's asking if one needs a living spiritual master to chant the holy name purely.
Does one need a living spiritual master to chant the holy name of the Lord purely? So that question is a very important question. Prabhupada, my spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, he gave the instruction that after his disappearance, he gave this in May of 1977. He gave the instruction that after he disappeared, the devotees, the new devotees who come to this movement would become disciples of his disciples. He said, my grand disciples. So that is an instruction from Srila Prabhupada for the members of the Krishna consciousness movement. And as we know, if we study carefully the scriptures, there are 10 offenses against chanting the holy names. The third one is to disobey the order of the spiritual master. So one thinks, well, I don't want to take one of these Prabhupada disciples as my spiritual master. I mean, after all, so many of them fell down, they weren't really qualified. I don't really trust them, so I'm just not going to accept any one of them as my spiritual master. Well, Prabhupada said you're supposed to do that, so you really need to find one who is qualified to be a spiritual master. Just because some are disqualified doesn't mean they're all disqualified. Just because you encounter a counterfeit note, just like one time I was leaving India and I was changing my dollars, my rupees into dollars, and the guy in the counter, he handed me one 500 rupee note back. He said, this one's counterfeit. He wouldn't give me anything for it. So that means I don't deal in rupees anymore, because there was a counterfeit rupee, you see? So counterfeit gurus or unqualified gurus means somewhere there's a qualified guru, you see? So one should find out that qualified spiritual master. The fact is that Krishna is not so cruel that he would allow the disciplic succession to die out, you see, with Prabhupada's disappearance. He's not so cruel and so wicked. Krishna is full of mercy. So he's definitely going to empower one, two, or more, he's definitely going to empower at least one, if not many more, of the followers of Prabhupada to become bona fide gurus. He's definitely going to do that. There'll be at least one. And Prabhupada's order was, actually he told us here in Los Angeles, he said, become perfect in understanding this science become guru and deliver the whole world. So actually every disciple of Prabhupada was ordered to become an empowered spiritual master who could deliver the whole world. Every single one. So some of them are bound to come out okay. If you throw enough mud against the wall, some of it's going to stick. So some of them should be okay. And some of them are. They're definitely. I have many godbrothers. It's just they're absolutely, even though they're my godbrothers still, they're absolutely luminaries for me. And I hear their lectures, I just go into ecstasy. They're luminaries. They turn the night into day just by the words coming from their mouths. So there's definitely many qualified spiritual masters created by Prabhupada, you see. So one should select one of them. You know, check out here in LA, you have a great opportunity. So many, there's always, every week another luminary comes passing through, you see. Check out the scene. Krishna, just be sincere to become a self-realized soul. And Krishna, who is the Chaitya Guru within your heart, revealed, this is your spiritual master. Now you have met your spiritual master. Now you've met him. Now give your heart and soul to him. Dedicate your whole life to following his instructions. This principle is very important. Like here we have a tripod, you see. It's very solidly holding this mic. You take out one leg, nope. Two legs, nope. One leg, nope. You see, you need three legs to be solid. So in the wonderful book called The Nectar of Devotion, in chapter 6, How to Discharge Devotional Service, the first three items given by Rupa Goswami and repeated by Srila Prabhupada as essential things to become solidly fixed in the self-realization process. The first one is, take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. The second one is, get initiated by the bona fide spiritual master. And the third one is, obey the bona fide spiritual master. The first two alone will not work. That's called Christianity. Yeah, I accept Jesus. I got baptized, I accept Jesus. My father told me, he said, son, I can do whatever I want because I accepted Jesus. See, it doesn't work that way. Jesus says, thou shalt not kill. But they're all killing, you see. You have to find a bona fide spiritual master, take shelter of him, solidify that shelter by a vow called initiation, and then be fully obedient, keep your vow. That's basically it. If you do those three things, shelter, diksha, and obedience, SDO is the way to go. You see, shelter, diksha, and obedience. Then you'll become solidly fixed on the transcendental platform, and very soon you will personally realize Krishna. Very soon you'll realize Krishna directly. Your original identity you had before you entered this material world, it will become revived in any one of five primary rasas. You're actually an eternal associate of the Lord in his transcendental kingdom that will all come back to you in due course if you take this process seriously. Shelter, diksha, and obedience. Okay? Anything else?
How does one become initiated?
How does one become initiated?
Initiation means that you have demonstrated to the spiritual master that you're able to follow various principles, some simple principles. Prabhupada gave the standard for initiation as this, to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra on Japa Mala beads at least 16 times around the beads every day. That's a lifetime vow. Every day I will go around the beads at least 16 times. And along with that, I will avoid illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, and gambling. If one will actually do this and show that you're able to do that and maintain it, you have to show, just like when I wanted to get initiated, I had to wait 6 months. To show that I could do it. See, I could maintain the vow. So there's some waiting period, and devotees in the local temple. Are you living here in Los Angeles? Yeah. You just have to let the devotees here know you'd like to become initiated, and you're chanting the rounds now. You're following the principles, and they have some training programs here. Just like the Bhaktivatsala here, he trains his Dr. Sala Prabhu. He has. You train new devotees? Yeah. So you can take guidance from him, ongoing guidance. I'm having trouble doing this. How can, you can get ongoing guidance, and then once you've proven you're able to follow these principles, and the local leaders here are able to see, oh yes, so-and-so is really doing well. He's fixing his chanting, he's fixing the vows, we recommend him for initiation, then myself or one of the other gurus will initiate you as our disciple, whichever one you choose. You see. So in this way, it's a wonderful process. I know I was holding out, devotees were telling me I should get initiated, but one day I realized, when I was hearing the devotees singing the Grivastakam prayers, the London devotees, along with George Harrison, they made a beautiful album called the Radha Krishna Temple Album. And I realized when I heard the love coming from the voices, actually coming from the hearts, it wasn't just coming from the voices, when I could actually feel the love calling from the heart of these devotees that they were feeling for Prabhupada, I knew this is a sweet love that I have personally never experienced and ever in my whole life, or even in millions of lifetimes. And being an envious person by nature, I wanted to also taste that love. So I said, okay, I'm going to get initiated. So now you got to wait 6 months. Do this and you'll be qualified. So I finally got qualified. Actually, after 5 months, we all came out from Texas here. We were here in LA. There was huge initiations. They're initiating many, many devotees, but I had to sit and watch. I couldn't get initiated because I'd only been chanting for 5 months. And I was really upset because they said that Prabhupada's an old man, he can die at any time. So I was really worried, but then by Krishna's grace, on August 12, 1971, I got a letter from London. Prabhupada accepted me as his disciple. So you just have to talk to the local leaders, tell them you want to get initiated, and they'll help you prepare yourself. You don't have to choose a guru right away, but just say, I want to become initiated. Sometimes devotees have a guru in mind, sometimes they don't. Either way is cool. You just qualify yourself by being fixed in the principles, and once you're qualified, then you can actually do it, get initiated. Next question.
How does one recognize a bona fide spiritual master? Does he necessarily have all the 26 qualities that are listed in the chapter?
Who is asking, how does one recognize a qualified spiritual master?
How do you recognize a qualified spiritual master? Yeah, if you read Prabhupada's books, it'll be pretty clear to see. What are the standards of a bona fide spiritual master? Prabhupada very clearly describes, and it's also quoted in the verse often cited by Srila Prabhupada, tadvaganartam sarum sagarume vavagashet samitpane shrotiyam brahmanishtam. Shrotiyam brahmanishtam, that's what you have to look for. Shrotiyam means the shruti, or the scriptures. He's a living embodiment of the scriptures. He's always repeating this. He's learned in the scriptures. He's realized in the scriptures. He's a living embodiment of the scriptures. He's a pure representative of the scriptures. He doesn't speak anything which is not confirmed in the scriptures. He doesn't add or subtract from the scriptures. And Brahma Nishtam. Brahma means ultimately Krishna. And Nishtam means fixed in Krishna consciousness. Brahma Nishtam. He's always thinking about Krishna, he's always bowing down to Krishna, he's always talking about Krishna, he only eats foods that have been offered to Krishna, he's completely immersed in Krishna 24 hours a day. In fact, as Prabhupada says, the bona fide spiritual master has Krishna within his heart, and he will impart Krishna into your heart. So if you might meet a teacher who, by hearing from him, you feel how Krishna is now becoming manifested in your heart, then you know you got the real McCoy. Is that you got a bona fide spiritual master. And you can go for it. Become his disciple and take it all the way to your original sarupa in the spiritual sky. Next question.
We know that the chanting of Hare Krishna is the means for self-realization in this age. Prabhu, could you speak about the other ages? And what were the other processes for self-realization, please?
Yes, there are four yugas, Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwarpa Yuga, and Kali Yuga. In the Satya Yuga, they would do the mystic yoga system, Ashtanga Yoga. And it was a very, very long, drawn-out process. It took Valmiki Muni 60,000 years sitting in the yogic postures, yam niyam, the rules and regulations, asana, sitting in rigid asanas, dharana, meditation, very, very intensely absorbed, 60,000 years it took him. And that's actually quite short according to the description of Brahmaji. Brahmaji states it takes millions of years actually to achieve the perfection by that means. So Valmiki did it really quick in 60,000 years. The following yuga was the Treta Yuga. And in that yuga, it was great sacrificial ceremonies. They were able to do these yagyas or sacrificial ceremonies. It was so, the mantras were so perfectly pronounced that Lord Vishnu would personally descend and everyone could see him directly. But in this age, we don't have such qualified Brahmins who can perfectly chant the mantras. Even then, there was some question whether the mantras were chanted perfectly or not. Therefore, they had referee Brahmins who would sit and check every subtle nuance of every single mantra to make sure there wasn't a slight deviation of pronunciation. If an a becomes an a, it could completely flip the whole result of the yagya. You see, in Sanskrit, there's a short a, which is a, and there's a long a, which is a. So if they, in the middle of all these huge quantity of mantras, if one became an or one became an completely throw off the whole result of the sacrificial ceremony. So they had referee Brahmins who were, tuned in, intensely tuned into every single syllable coming out of the yogic Brahmins who were chanting the mantras to make sure there was no slip-ups. So we don't have the lifespan they had in the Satya Yuga to do those kind of that kind of 60,000 years of intense Ashtanga Yoga, sitting in the mountains somewhere with no nail clippers, no iPhone, no nothing, just you and the wilderness and some wild berries growing by, and that's it. That's not practical. Nor do we have the Brahmins of the like in the Treta Yuga, who can chant the mantras with absolute perfection. The following yuga, Dwarpa Yuga, there was a 1,000-year lifespan, and then elaborate temple worship was the means. And that temple worship was so pure, so perfect, that we cannot duplicate that in this age. We can only try to approximate it. We have beautiful temple worship over here on 2037-64 Watsika Avenue, but it's nothing compared to the Dwarpa Yuga. It is very, very elaborate, very, very precise. Everything, every little thing was just perfect. But in this age, we're not qualified to do the Ashtanga system for 60,000 years. We're not qualified to do sacrificial ceremonies like they could do previously. We're not qualified to do deity worship either, as they could in the previous yuga, Dwarpa Yuga. So in this age, the Lord has very kindly made the process very simple, that if you simply chant my holy names, Haranama, 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 Iv Kevalam, Kolona Steva, Nasteva, Nasteva, Gatir, and Yata. Chant the holy names, chant the holy names, chant the holy names. There's no other alternative, there is no other alternative. There is no other alternative for self-realization in this age. Because there's three denials, Nasteva, Nasteva, Nasteva. You see, those three denials denied the yogic system, not by the yogic system, not by the great sacrifices, nor by temple worship. All the three times stating, there's no other alternative, there is no other alternative, there is no other alternative, this denied the process of the three other ages. So in this age, it's very much easier to become self-realized. You can keep a job, you can have a family, you can have a smartphone, and you can go back to God. And you just have to engage everything in the service of Krishna or God with love. I mean, it's really easy, but you just have to be in the right mood with the right training and have faith in the process and give yourself to it completely And you'll be amazed at how the whole world becomes practically mystical. The whole world takes on a mystical glow because you start to experience divinity everywhere. Krishna's existence becomes more and more apparent to you everywhere. This is described in the Bhagavatam, Bhakti Pireshanu Bhavavaraktir, Anyatra Chai Shatraka Eka Kalaha, Prapadya Manashi Zatashtana Shush, Pushti Tushti Padasha Yomnaga Sam. Devotion, direct experience of the Lord within everything, and detachment from all types of material sense gratification occurs simultaneously for one who has taken shelter of the Supreme Person. Just as nourishment, eradication of hunger, and satisfaction of the tongue occur increasingly and simultaneously for one who is engaged in the activity known as eating. So if you can eat, can you eat? Yeah. If you can eat, you can become self-realized. Just got to apply the same science of eating to awakening the love of God within your heart. Same science. So if you can eat, you're qualified to practice the yoga of pure love. And we'll give you Krishna Prasadam in a few minutes so you can begin real easily with your tongue enjoying some nice foods. So, okay, one more question, yes. There's two more, maybe we'll squeeze in two.
In this age, it's so easy to commit offenses, and especially against the Vaishnavas, and often that can be very detrimental for our chanting. So sometimes we don't even know that we've committed an offense, but we're struggling a lot with our chanting. So how can we try to protect ourselves or train ourselves to act in such a way that won't offend the Vaishnavas or create obstacles in our flow?
I think I grasped it. Just be an ocean of love, that's all. Wherever you go, just be loving. Always be in the middle of love. Always show your love and respect for everyone wherever you go, you see. I mean, even for everyone, even non-devotees. It's like I got a really cool phone number on my iPhone. I got an account with T-Mobile. It blew me away. They gave me 512-999-1234. I couldn't believe it. 999-1234. But I get a lot of wrong number calls, you know. But instead of being angry, I preach, you see. Somebody called later for the tax office, and I said, "Oh, this is Sankarshan Das of the Hare Krishna movement. We're out to save the world. Have you heard about us?" And then I said, "And God bless you." And he said, "And God bless you." So, you know, if you just be in that mood of giving Krishna to everybody, even a wrong number on your mobile phone, you know, is always trying to give kindness and love to everyone, it really pays off. It really, your consciousness, you're always in that mood of love, you see. It's like I'm talking to you. I'm trying to show you that I love you, you see, by the way I talk to you. I'm trying to express my love in the way I answer your question. So in that mood, you always try to give love to everyone. And it's amazing how much love will come back to you. It's amazing. You'll be swimming in an ocean of love if you're always trying to give love. Okay? Next one.
Just going back to the initiation arena. If one feels like they've found their spiritual master, but that person does not or no longer initiates.
I have found a person, but he's not initiating. Well, it's either one of two things. You can see if you can beg his mercy that he might change his mind and initiate you. You could do that. Or if he's really, you know, it's really obvious he's never ever going to initiate, say, okay, but you'll be my siksha guru. Now you tell me where I should get initiated. And that way you're still connected with him because it's by your siksha. That way your whole relationship with your diksha guru is in service to him. So that way you have a connection. Either way, you know, beg him for the mercy or just, you know, either way you'll be connected with him eternally, you see. It's like Vishnu Janaswami is very much a siksha guru for me, but he wasn't initiating. Prabhupada is my initiating guru, but Vishnu Janaswami is sitting right here in my heart eternally, you see, because he's the one who convinced me to surrender to Prabhupada. So he's also, as a best, him and Prabhupada are both sitting here, right here eternally in my heart, you see. So, yeah.
But if somebody accepts somebody as a spiritual master, following instruction is then if they're spiritual master. He says,
listen to what she's saying.
Then one has accepted someone as a spiritual master. If you don't follow the instructions, where is the question of spiritual master?
Spiritual master means follow the instructions. That's right. That's a bet.
Yeah, she's saying so. Then if one accepts a spiritual master, but then they don't follow the
instructions. Oh, if one accepts a guru and doesn't follow the instructions, they haven't really accepted the guru. One of my godbrothers, initiating guru, he said, yeah, they're an initiate, but they're not a disciple. Yeah, that's my point exactly. If you accept that person as your spiritual master, he says, I'm not initiating, and you say, well, who should I take it from? And you say, well, take it from so-and-so. Then you're connected with him.
Then
you're obeying him. You're acting under his instructions.
Otherwise, if one gets initiated and not follow the instruction,
there's no point. You're not a disciple. If you get initiated and you don't follow the instruction, you're not a disciple. That's all. You're an initiate only. You're not a disciple. Prabhupada wrote me one letter. He said, disciple means discipline. So if you don't discipline yourself according to the orders of your spiritual master, you're not a disciple. You're just an initiate. You got two legs on your tripod and you can you fall down. So hand me a copy of the book. So, when I was a young brahmachari out on traveling from Kirtan in Florida many years ago, I had an inspiration to write Prabhupada a letter asking different ideas I could do for being a preacher of Krishna consciousness. And one of the items on my list was write books. And Prabhupada responded to my long list of things that I thought I might do to be a preacher. And Prabhupada said, your ideas, your proposals sound very pleasing to me. He said, I will be returning to the U.S. very soon. I would like to meet with you. So Prabhupada was really encouraged by my proposals, and one of them was to write books. And now, after many decades, it finally happened. A book came out called Truth Works, and the meaning of the title is very significant. You know that something is true because it actually works. So how do you know Krishna consciousness is true? Because by applying it, you actually realize God. You come in direct contact with God Himself. So the title is very significant, and this course is actually coming out of my online training program, the Ultimate Self-Realization Course. I've been answering questions since 2003. Every day I get bombarded with questions. Actually, I love it. I love your questions too. I've been answering an avalanche of questions every day since 2003. And my disciples went and they took the cream of the crop, I think the first 4 years, this is volume one, by the way. The first 4 years of the course, they took the cream of the cream of the crop and they put it in a book. It's organized in different sections. For anybody who would like to take up self-realization, this is the handbook you need. My godbrother Hari Sari Prabhu has recommended this as the handbook of Krishna consciousness. So the questions and answers are put into different categories, and it's also fantastic for telling newcomers about Krishna consciousness, because many of my readers are newcomers, and I'm presenting it in a way which will be very attractive and enlightening for someone who doesn't know anything about it at all. So this is a very handy book for preachers also, those who like to teach bhakti yoga to people who are new to it, the yoga of pure love. This is the handbook you need to empower you to do that. We only have a limited quantity, only what we could bring in our suitcase, and they're here right now, and you can get one from Bhaktivatsala. Anybody, and plus I'll give you you come up, give me your name, I'll give you a written blessing along with my signature in the book. So we thank you all very much. We love you. God bless you. Hare Krishna. Yeah.